Hello, this is Paula Kaufman with the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, October 10th, 2019. We'll start today's reading on the front page with an article headlined, Education Seeking Peace. LSA Students Get Help for Stress Through Meditation Learning by Valerie Wells, Decatur. School can be stressful between homework and tests and social problems. To help the junior high and high school students at Lutheran School Association learn healthy ways to deal with stress, Principal Allison Nolan contacted Brooke Hayden, owner of Lotus Waves, to come and lead the 150 students through a guided meditation. It's the end of the quarter, and it's always long. It's always stressful, Nolan said. They're worrying about their grades. Students this year are talking about compassion and community in their prides, which are small groups within the school, often focused Bible study or community involvement. Community refers not only to the outer Decatur community, but also to the one within the school, she said. Being part of a community is helping each other when people in the community are hurting or struggling, but also being aware of when we are and asking for help, Nolan said. The gym lights were dimmed, and students brought yoga mats, beach towels, or small blankets with them. They settled down on the blankets in big and small groups as Hayden spoke over soothing music, directing them to get comfy, whatever that is for them. Most lay down on their stomachs, some on their backs, and a few sat cross-legged. Meditation is a way to relax, Hayden said. For the first few moments, just feel your body. Allow your body to rest for the next few moments. Let your thoughts leave your mind. Meditation is mostly a matter of noticing what's happening while it's happening, she said, urging the students to concentrate on their breathing and the movements their bodies made as they breathed. If you're going to learn meditation, I'm trained in mindfulness meditation, there's a lot of different types. It's better to be guided. It's like learning to ride a bike. You need to do it in stages. You need to listen to somebody because our minds are so busy, Hayden said after the session. If you don't have somebody guiding you, you will get all caught up in your mind with nobody to bring you back. After a while, people can learn to quiet their own thoughts and focus, she said. She enjoys meditating in complete silence sometimes. She suggested a couple of apps the students could download to help them if they want to practice meditation on their own, including Calm and Insight Timer. I have that Calm app, said Taylor Jones, a freshman, who listens to the music to help her go to sleep. Keely Keene, also a freshman, listens to hers when she's reading and doing homework. It helps her concentrate. It helps me calm down and relax, Taylor said. Lotus Waves. Brooke Hayden can be reached at 217-412-3017. By email at lotuswaves1111@gmail.com or on Facebook at facebook.com/lotuswaves. Decatur at Work. Macon Resources, Inc. honors employees. Production workers getting daily treats, surprises this week. By Jeanette Beckett. Decatur. The handiwork of Macon Resources, Inc.'s production division can be seen all around Decatur, from lawn care for local businesses to license plates on vehicles. This week, the Decatur agency is taking extra steps to recognize the employees who work in the janitorial and lawn care fields, packaging, maintenance, and manufacturing license plates. The production division includes more than 30 workers. They are like the offensive linemen of the world, said Brad Outen, director of sales and production. They do a lot of the work, but the quarterback gets the interview. The agency, which works with people who have developmental disabilities, has surprised production employees with daily treats all week, including donuts, bags of candy, cookies, stainless steel water bottles, specially designed MRI t-shirts, and a pizza party. They come to work, they do the best they can, Outen said. They don't need the accolades, but boy, it's nice. 60% of the division's employees have developmental disabilities, according to Rachel Moran, Director of Development. Some also receive services through MRI. Employees gain work experience and a paycheck, ideally so they can find a way out on their own and lead a more independent life, Outen said. Outen said the facility makes all of the license plates for the state of Illinois. We have since 1983, he said. Any plate that you see on any car came right out of our back door. The packaging assembly division prepares materials used for packaging in local businesses. Fuyao Glass, Simtech Filtration in Bement, and Muller Company have benefited from the production employees at MRI. The janitorial department manages 5 rest areas in central Illinois. The employees clean, mow, and perform other duties at the facilities. Janitorial work is also utilized at other state-managed buildings. The jobs generate a lot of revenue for us to support the programs that we have, Outen said. People just want to feel like they are contributing to society. MRI client Cheryl Harding, 49, has been employed in the production division for nearly 13 years. She has worked in other departments, but prefers the license plate assembly line. It pays more, she said. Working with on the assembly line may be considered the coveted job. Harding's co-worker, Noah Gillespie, 41, said the area is ideal for him as well. He has been a production employee since 2001. It's a little bit of a challenge, he said, but I like the hours here. Moran said a positive outcome for MRI clients is the job training. Then we work to place them into a job, she said. MRI's Community Employment Services Program assists clients in finding other jobs once they're ready to move on. When somebody gets enough skills under their belt, then the community employment specialist can take them out into the community and look for job placement, Outen said. The production department also employs full-time workers who are not clients. Ashley Yonker, 31, was honored this week along with MRI clients she works beside. I love the job, she said. I like working with all the people here. They're really friendly. Diane Robinson, 50, has worked on the license plate line for 3 years. She said the clients make her job enjoyable. But I know this job is important, she said. Without the license plates division, our clients would have nowhere to go. Most of the employees were unaware of their special recognition this week, but appreciated the gratitude once they heard they were receiving a gift. It is really nice that MRI recognizes all the hard work we do, Robinson said. They do treat us very well. Christina Hall, 29, has worked in the production department for 6 years. She continues her employment with the agency because of her co-workers as well as the management and what they do for her. They treat us with respect every single day, she said. MRI has honored the production employees in the past, but we haven't quite done it like this, Moran said. This is the first year to make it really big. Man gets probation in sex case. Dillman pleads guilty to child exploitation, receives 18 months. By Tony Reed, Decatur. William S. Dillman, Sr., a Decatur man accused of fondling the chest of a girl under 15, appeared in court Wednesday pleading guilty to the sexual exploitation of a child. Macon County Circuit Court Judge Thomas Griffith sentenced Dillman, 58, to 18 months probation, and ordered him to undergo a sex offender evaluation and complete any required treatment. He was also ordered to register as a sex offender for the next 10 years and have no contact with the victim or any unsupervised contact with any child under 18. Dillman made his guilty plea as part of a plea agreement negotiated by his attorney, Gary Geisler, which saw a charge of aggravated criminal sexual abuse dismissed. Assistant Macon County State's Attorney Kate Kurtz said the offense occurred between January and June 2018, after the girl had stayed overnight at Dillman's home. A sworn Decatur police affidavit, linked to the case, said the girl had come into the kitchen to say good morning to Dillman when he lifted her shirt and assaulted her. The affidavit said the child had not told anyone about what happened until 6 or 7 months after the incident. She appeared in court to read a victim impact statement and told the judge she was still living with the after effects of what had been done to her. Words don't even begin to express how hurt I am, she said. I've had so many sleepless nights. It's hard for me to love others because I can't love myself. This has been one of the worst times of my life. Kurtz told the court the plea deal with Dillman had been discussed with the victim and approved by her. Dillman had been due to have a bench trial before Griffith, but that was scrubbed after his guilty plea. At an earlier hearing, the defendant had won a victory when his lawyer argued that prosecution plans to introduce a defense witness who said she too had been sexually assaulted as a child by Dillman would be too prejudicial. New arrest made in forged check scheme by Tony Reed, Decatur. A Decatur man was arrested after police said he gave another man a forged check to attempt to cash for him. The arrest is the latest in a series of arrests linked to an investigation into multiple forged checks stolen from Mattoon's Lakeland College and other businesses located in Decatur. A sworn Decatur police affidavit said the 33-year-old man had handed over a forged check for $1,955 several months ago. He gave the check to a 36-year-old accomplice who tried to cash the check at a liquor store, but the store refused and he then ran away. Later, caught by police, the accomplice identified the 33-year-old from a photo lineup, and police found and arrested him Friday. He was booked on a preliminary charge of 2 counts of forgery. Preliminary charges are subject to review by the state attorney's office. Writing in the affidavit, Decatur Police Officer Christopher Scalen said Lakeland College Police Department had reported 5 checks to have been stolen and forged. 2 checks for $580 and $616 were forged in the name of a Decatur woman who was arrested on a preliminary forgery charge July 9th. Scalen said when the woman was asked where she obtained the checks, she said, "Two guys I got drugs from and owed money to." Scalen said one of the men was then later identified as the same 33-year-old who had supplied the $1,955 check. Scalen said all the stolen checks had been forged in the same way. The original payee was scratched or washed off, and the forged payee was typed onto the check. In May, a 50-year-old Decatur man had been arrested on fraud charges after his name had been added to an altered stolen check from Lakeland. The same man was also accused of obtaining funds from a $70,000 check stolen from a Decatur credit union. Rock Springs Fairview Bike Trail Closing for Repairs by Garrett Karsten, Decatur. The Rock Springs Fairview Bike Trail is scheduled for repair work beginning this month. Work on the trail linking Rock Springs Conservation Area and Fairview Park includes repair on erosion control structures, reshaping of bridge approaches, and installation of a new bridge deck. Intermittent closures to move material and equipment will begin during the second week of October, followed by a long-term closure until the project is complete. Work should be finished by late winter. No official dates were released in a statement by the Macon County Conservation District. Daily updates of the trail's progress can be found on the Conservation District's website, macon county conservation.org, and its Facebook page. The $226,000 project was funded partly by a $180,800 grant from the Federal Transportation Department and Illinois Department of Natural Resources. Additional cost for the project was provided by the Conservation District. Chicago Mayor, teachers holding up contract talks over housing. Union replies, "We have nearly 17,000 homeless students." By Diana Wallace, Chicago Tribune. Chicago. Mayor Lori Lightfoot has raised another issue that she said is holding up an agreement with the teachers' union, affordable housing. In a statement late Tuesday, 9 days from a strike date set by the Chicago Teachers Union, the mayor said the union is demanding that the city enact CTU's preferred affordable housing policy as part of their contract. With the potential walkout looming, Lightfoot said the union laid out this demand rather than providing a response to what she called the city's comprehensive contract offer. She said that Tuesday marked the 49th time that representatives from Chicago Public Schools and the CTU have been at the bargaining table, and the 142nd day without a full counterproposal from the union. In a response early Wednesday morning, the CTU tweeted that, "We have nearly 17,000 homeless students in CPS. Our proposals demand more staff to support families in danger of losing housing and advocate for a program that financially helps support staff members and new teachers purchase a home," the union continued. The mayor finds them unreasonable. Lightfoot said she welcomes CTU's input into her strategy for addressing the issue and said the union shares much of our vision on affordable housing, which she called a critical issue that affects residents across Chicago, and everyone's voices need to be heard during this process. Briefs by Herald and Review staff. Coroner names motorcyclist who died in crash. Shelbyville. The Champaign County Coroner's Office released the name of a Shelbyville motorcyclist who died Wednesday after a crash last month. Randy James, 61, died at Carle Foundation Hospital in Urbana. Coroner Dwayne E. Northrup said James had been injured in a September 11th crash in Effingham County and succumbed to injuries. Northrup said the crash remained under investigation by his office and the state police. Police investigate shots fired incident. Decatur. Police are appealing for witnesses and information after multiple shots were fired Tuesday night in the area of Country Trails Apartments, 2470 Country Trail Road in Decatur. Lieutenant Shannon Gutierrez Seal with Decatur Police said police responded to reports of gunfire around 10:19 p.m. Officers found two apartment buildings with bullet defects in them and several vehicles that had been damaged, she said. Seal said witnesses described three vehicles driving away from the area shortly after the gunfire broke out, but it wasn't clear, she said, whether the occupants of the vehicles were involved in what happened. If people living in that area or had their vehicle in the area at that time find damage consistent with the time and place of the incident, please let us know, Seal added. And she urged anyone with information about the shootings to call the police at 217-424-2734 or Crime Stoppers at 217-423-TIPS-8477. Coroner IDs man killed in crash. Decatur. A Springfield man killed in a motorcycle collision Tuesday outside Hervey City has been identified by the Macon County coroner. Daniel Judd, 57, was pronounced dead at the scene at about 5 p.m. after suffering massive head and torso injuries from a motorcycle crash at Illinois 121 and Stocks Road in rural Mount Zion Township, according to a statement from Coroner Michael Day. The Macon County Sheriff's Office is investigating the crash, Day said. The sheriff's office said Tuesday that the motorcycle was traveling south when it went into oncoming traffic, hitting a vehicle towing a boat going in the opposite way and another vehicle at about 2 p.m. No other injuries were reported. Man hospitalized in Coles County crash, Coles County. A 49-year-old Decatur man was sent to the hospital with serious injuries after the vehicle he was traveling in left the roadway and overturned, police say. A statement from Illinois State Police said a 24-year-old Bloomington man was driving a 2008 Mazda 6 north on Interstate 57 near mile marker 183 in Coles County when he lost control of the vehicle at 9:06 p.m. The vehicle left the road and overturned in the grass median, the press release said. The 49-year-old passenger was sent to an area hospital with serious injuries. Both occupants were wearing seatbelts, the press release said, and the 24-year-old driver was charged with improper lane usage. The crash is under investigation by the Illinois State Police. Mattoon man faces federal charges of child pornography by Tony Reed, Mattoon. A Mattoon man facing federal child pornography charges was arraigned Wednesday in federal court in Urbana. Tyler L. Foote, 28, is pleading not guilty to four counts alleging the transmission of child pornography between March 2017 and January 2019. He also denied possessing child pornography on August 16, 2019. U.S. Magistrate Judge Eric I. Long ordered that Foote remain in the custody of the U.S. Marshals Service. Foote was arrested August 16th on Coles County state charges after a joint investigation by the Mattoon Police Department and the Illinois Attorney General's Internet Crimes Against Children Task Force. If convicted, Foote faces maximum penalties of 20 years in prison on each count of transmission of child porn and a maximum of another 10 years if convicted on the possession charge. And each of the five counts he is charged with carries a maximum fine of up to $250,000. A news release from the U.S. Attorney's Office, Central District of Illinois, said the case will be prosecuted by Assistant U.S. Attorney Ellie M. Pearson and Special Assistant U.S. Attorney Shannon O'Brien. The U.S. Attorney's Office said the case against Foote is being brought as part of a nationwide effort called Project Safe Childhood. It's part of a nationwide push by the Department of Justice to fight child sexual exploitation and abuse. Investigation of Lachlan McDonald shooting released by Don Babwin, Associated Press, Chicago. Chicago's law department on Wednesday released for the first time the city watchdog's full investigative reports into the 2014 fatal shooting of black teenager Lachlan McDonald by a white police officer, a move the mayor has championed in her push for transparent government and to regain public trust. Mayor Lori Lightfoot has promised to shine a light on police misconduct and voiced concerns that withholding the Inspector General's office reports only generates mistrust. There is no incident in recent Chicago history that has created such distrust of City Hall and the police department than then-Mayor Rahm Emanuel's unsuccessful legal battle to keep under wraps the dash cam video showing Officer Jason Van Dyke shoot the teen 16 times. Inspector General Joseph Ferguson applauded the release of the documents, telling the Chicago Sun-Times this week that the only way the public will have confidence in government is to put the information out there. The City Council unanimously passed an ordinance last month overruling city laws that required the law department to keep the Inspector General's office reports confidential. Under the new ordinance, the department is authorized to release such investigations in cases that involved a death or a possible felony and is of compelling public interest. The reports don't appear to reveal much new information on the investigations into Van Dyke and other 15 officers who Ferguson recommended be fired or disciplined. Many details were revealed during the trial that ended with Van Dyke's conviction of second-degree murder, and another trial that ended with the acquittal of three officers charged with trying to cover up the shooting. Details revealed at trial included findings that the video proved Van Dyke and his partner, Officer Joseph Walsh, lied when they said McDonald moved toward the officers, raised a knife at them, attempted to kill them, and tried to get up off the ground after he was shot. The police department had already released scores of documents. Furthermore, the Chicago Tribune wrote stories after obtaining thousands of pages of the Inspector General's office reports when they were still confidential, highlighting how high-ranking members of the department determined the shooting was justified after watching the video. One apparently new element in the documents released Wednesday was that one of the police officers destroyed evidence, including handwritten notes from interviews detectives had conducted with civilian witnesses. The report concluded that the Inspector General's office would have recommended his firing had he not retired in 2016. Breaking Down the 10-Run Inning by Benjamin Hockman, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Atlanta. It was like a Mike Tyson first-round knockout. Here's a look at the Cardinals' first inning of Game 5, the 13 plate appearances that gave them a 10-0 lead, the most runs ever scored in the first inning of a MLB postseason game. The Cardinals went on to win 13-1. Dexter Fowler. Right away, two big things happened in one at-bat. Mike Foltynewicz hadn't walked one batter in his amazing Game 2 start, and he walked the first batter of his Game 5 start. And since Game 1, Fowler was 0-13 with no walks. And here, in the biggest game of the year, he earned a leadoff walk. Colton Wong. Looking back, how funny is it the Cards were bunting here to manufacture a run? At the same time, even one run against Foltynewicz was better than the previous game. Who knew at the time that Wong's out here on the sacrifice would be the only run Foltynewicz recorded the entire game? Paul Goldschmidt. He entered this game as one of two Cardinals actually hitting well. And the Cards knew, after Game 2, they shouldn't pass up a hittable Foltynewicz fastball, since his slider was so good. Goldie singled on a 94-mile-per-hour fastball. Marcell Ozuna, he is so hot, he wasn't even intimidated by the slider. He slapped one to the opposite field to drive in the game's first run. 1-0 Cards. Yadier Molina, this was the first sign that the Braves, not just Foltynewicz, were vulnerable. Molina hit a grounder 100 miles per hour to first baseman Freddie Freeman, a Gold Glove winner last season. Freeman made an error, which loaded the bases. Matt Carpenter. This was Carpenter's first at-bat against Folty, since Carp didn't start in Game 2. It was an important at-bat, and Carp's only at-bat. After drawing a 5-pitch walk, he was pulled at the half-inning's end, before playing at all in the field. The Cards moved Tommy Edmond to third, Dexter Fowler to right, and brought in Harrison Bader to play center and bat in Carp's spot. Score, 2-0 Cards. Tommy Edmond. The pitch thrown to Edmond couldn't have been worse, right down the middle, and Tommy pinballed it down the first base line off an angled wall in right for a double. Score, 4-0 Cards. Paul DeJong. Intentional walk. Hey, Paul DeJong actually got on base. Braves pull Foltynewicz, bring in Max Fried. Jack Flaherty. The game was still a game with Flaherty batting before even throwing a pitch. Facing his old high school teammate, Flaherty drew a walk from Fried, driving in the fifth run. Not a good start for Fried. Basketball. Calhoun accused. Hartford. Hall of Fame basketball coach Jim Calhoun has been accused of sexual discrimination by a former associate athletic director at the University of St. Joseph, the Division III school where Calhoun now works. Jacqueline Piscatelli filed a lawsuit Wednesday in U.S. District Court against the small Catholic school in West Hartford, which began admitting men in 2018. Piscatelli's attorneys say she was fired in June after complaining about the conduct of men in the athletic department, including the 77-year-old Calhoun, whom she alleges helped turn the department into a boys' club after he was hired to form and coach the school's men's basketball team. Warner player dies, Lake Wales, Florida. Authorities say a senior wide receiver for Warner University's football team died during practice. School officials said in a statement that Theodore Hammonds collapsed after a non-contact drill Tuesday and was tended to by the team's staff. Polk County Emergency Services took Hammonds to a hospital where he died. School officials said they don't know what caused Hammonds to collapse and that their thoughts and prayers are with his family and friends. The Ledger reports Hammonds had caught 14 passes for 193 yards and had 2 touchdowns in 4 games. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Herald and Review, dated Thursday, October 10th, 2019. Please stay tuned.